House Special Committee on Energy to order at 10:17 in the morning. Today is Thursday, January 23rd of 2020. Members present today are Representative Zolkowski, Representative Lincoln, Representative Rauscher, and myself, Representative Hopkins, Chair of the Committee. Please let the record reflect that we do, in fact, have a quorum today to do business. Welcome everybody back from last year, and looking forward to a productive session this year. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Butch Carver, and our LIO moderator, Tom Raymond. They will join us during our committee meetings to ensure that we have accurate minutes, clear audio and video, and smooth telephonic testimony. I also want to note on the record that Vice Chair Representative Sponholz has joined us as well. Thank you, Representative Sponholz. And of course, today our committee aide is with us as well. Our committee will be working with legislators and staff to ensure that we have all the documents and materials we're going to need during the committee hearings coming up this year. And Joe Hardenbrook, my staff, should make sure that everybody has the materials the day before. And if there's anything that comes in late, we'll deliver a hard copy in hand and make sure they're available here at the meeting. And Mr. Hardenbrook will be emailing all of our staff the materials before each meeting. Finally, as last year, and you all know on your calendar, the scheduled meeting times for this committee is Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10:15 a.m. to 12:15 a.m. This year, again, we're going to be working with the Department of Environmental Conservation Budget Subcommittee, and Representative Ortiz and his staff will be working with us on those budget items, and due to scheduling conflicts, we're going to be meeting with that subcommittee at 11:15, not 12:15 when those meetings happen, but we'll let you all know on the calendar as well. Before we move on to today's business, are there any questions we've got? All right. Today's business, we only have one piece of legislation on the calendar, House Bill 151. It's a committee bill by the House Special Committee on Energy dealing with electric reliability organizations. It is the intent of myself, the chair, to hear a presentation on the legislation from Mr. Hardenbrook and the committee aide, take invited testimony only from the on the bill from Commissioner Pickett of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and then hold the bill for future hearings. But first, Madam Vice Chair Sponholz, can I have a motion to bring the CS before us here at the committee?
Chair Hopkins, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for HB 151, work draft version U, as the working document.
Thank you very much. Is there any objection? All right, so ordered. Now that the document is before the committee, will Mr. Hardenbrook please come up to the table, as you are already, put yourself on the record, and present the changes to the new CS.
Excellent. For the record, Joe Hardenbrook, committee aide to the House Special Committee on Energy. Thank you for the opportunity to do a quick overview on the committee substitute for House Bill 151, update the committee on some of the developments. Update the committee on some of the developments that have occurred over the interim. We have Commissioner Bob Pickett of the RCA online today to discuss the Commission's continuing efforts and their support for the legislation being crafted by the Senate Special Committee on the Rail Belt Electrical System, which is the companion legislation to the bill before us. The CS, which the committee has adopted, moves Senate Bill 123 and House Bill 151 into total alignment, reflecting the most recent draft language vetted by the utilities, stakeholders, and advocates, and endorsed by the Regulatory Commission. It is our hope that by combining our efforts with the other body, we can work constructively together on this complex issue, engage with the utilities, the RCA, and consumers to craft the best legislation possible, and to work towards increasing efficiencies in the rail belt, and ultimately increasing reliability and reducing cost to Alaska families and businesses. As Representative Hopkins mentioned earlier, this legislation has come before us due to the efforts of the RCA in addressing a question posed by the legislature in 2014, namely, would electric utility customers from Fairbanks to Homer benefit from increased cooperation between the interconnected utilities of the rail belt? Among the RCA's recommendations was formation of a reliability organization, which would write and enforce common standards for safe and reliable operation of these interconnected utilities. The rail belt electric utilities have made significant progress towards collaboration and cooperation over this most recent interim. Most recently, all six entered into an agreement to work together to establish a reliability organization, and the memorandum of understanding establishing this organization is included in the bill packet. The RCA, in their letter of this month updating the legislature on the utility's progress, has recommended statutory changes that would affirm the RCA's authority to regulate a reliability organization, define the basic structure, responsibilities, and authorities of a reliability organization, and empower the RCA to require pre-approval of large generation and transmission projects undertaken by utilities that are part of this interconnected network. House Bill 151 and Senate Bill 123 reflect these recommendations, and if enacted, would support the utility's voluntary work to develop a reliability organization. For the information of the committee, we have provided in the bill packet the following items. The letter from the RCA to the legislature dated January 15, 2020, detailing progress to date on this issue and updating the legislature on progress towards the five goals listed in the 2015 letter to the legislature. The copy of that 2015 RCA letter is also included in your packet, as well as a copy of the MOU establishing the Rail Belt Reliability Council, which was signed by the six utilities on December 6, 2019. Finally, there's an article from the Alaska Journal of Commerce, dated 12/31/19, which provides a good synopsis of efforts to date and details the significance of the Memorandum of Understanding, which was signed. It's the hope of the chairman that these documents will provide the committee with a full picture of how the legislation before the committee has come to be. Commissioner Pickett will go into greater detail on the efforts undertaken by the RCA and the voluntary efforts, timelines, and data collection the commission has requested, directed, and overseen. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to quickly note and appreciate the efforts of the RCA, Legislative Legal, and the leadership of the Senate Special Committee on the Rail Belt Electrical System in crafting this legislation. I would note that work on this legislation is ongoing. Meetings continue between the utilities, stakeholders, and regulators to seek consensus on various aspects. As I will note in my overview of the sectional analysis, there are dates and deadlines in the legislation which will require updating in a future CS. I anticipate that the committee's review of this legislation in conjunction with the other body will be thorough, that these entities will continue to play a key role in our understanding of this issue, and that our actions will bring about a more cost-effective and resource-efficient electrical system in Alaska's rail belt. At this point, Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'd like to quickly walk the committee through a sectional analysis of the bill, which is also included in the packets. 151 establishes clear statutory authority for the Regulatory Commission of Alaska over an electric reliability organization.
Quickly, Mr. Harden, before you get too much further, just want to take a moment and reflect Representative Fields' arrival as well. Thank you, Representative Fields. Okay, continue.
Thank you, Representative. The bill defines participation in a reliability organization as well as the requirements, responsibilities, powers, and oversight of said reliability organization. Basically, we're dealing with Alaska Statute 4205, the Alaska Public Utilities Regulatory Act. In a new section on electric reliability organizations, this legislation would require interconnected utilities in a network served by a certificated reliability organization to participate in the reliability organization. Legislation provides a standard for RCA approval of the organization and directs the organization's governance. If no entity applies as a reliability organization by October of 2020, the RCA must form one. And I would just point out for the indulgence of the committee, this is one of the dates that will be addressed in a future CS. This legislation charges a reliability organization for developing standards for reliable operation of the power system, and the standards must be filed with the RCA as a tariff. The RCA may approve standards if they are just, reasonable, and not unduly discriminatory, and in the public interest. The RCA retains its enforcement powers. It also allows the RCA to require certain standards or changes, enables the reliability organization to impose penalties as necessary, and describes the process. Establishes a process for the RCA to require compliance with standards and to hear appeals. The legislation further requires the RCA to write regulations, including for conflict resolution and for organizational cost recovery. Regulations may be written to require the organization to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity and for issuing an open access transmission tariff to the reliability organization. Section 4205-293, we address integrated resource planning, charging the reliability organization with creating a plan for reliable, cost-effective operations, covering generation, transmission, and conservation. After hearing, the Regulatory Commission can approve, reject, or modify this plan and can allow utilities to recover planning costs in their rates. The cost of resources and other expenditures reflected in the approved plan may also be recovered in these utility rates. Section 4205-294 covers project pre-approval, requires the RCA approval for public utilities interconnected with a bulk power system to construct large generation and transmission facilities. RCA approval would require findings that the facility is a necessary component of the system it would connect with, complies with reliability standards, and is the most cost-effective way to serve connected utilities that would be substantially served by the facility in question. facility included in the most recent RCA-approved integrated resource plan is presumed approved unless action by the RCA is taken otherwise. Some new paragraphs added in and definitions defining the bulk power system, cybersecurity incidents, electric reliability organizations, electric utilities, interconnected electric energy transmission networks, load serving entities, and reliable operation. Finally, sections 3 and 4 add a section to uncodified law requiring the RCA to adopt regulations to implement this bill by July 1 of 2020. And again, this is one of the dates that will be addressed in a future CS. Section 4 sets an immediate effective date for Section 3, which enables the RCA to proceed with regulations to implement the bill. And Section 5 sets an effective date of July 1, 2020 for all other sections in the legislation. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my brief run-through of the sectional analysis for the CS for House Bill 151.
Thank you, Mr. Hardenbrook. I appreciate that presentation before the committee today. Are there any questions quickly before we move on to Commissioner Pickett? All right. Well, thank you. As I said earlier, we will take invited testimony from Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Commissioner Bob Pickett, who is joining us telephonically today. Mr. Pickett, are you online?
Thank you very much for the opportunity to telephonically appear before the commission. I apologize for not being down there, but our work demands right now are pretty intense, and I just couldn't break away to come to Juneau. I think Joe did an excellent job of an overview of the bill, but I thought what I'd do is perhaps just give a little bit of background and context as to how we sort of got to where we are right now. At the direction of the 2014 legislature, the commission was told to take a year-long look at the rail belt electric system and come back with recommendations. You know, at that time, there was a lot of contentious relationships between the various utilities. It was balkanized, fragmented, and on top of $1.5 billion in new rail belt generation over a relatively short period of time, there was concern that perhaps the system was not being operated as efficiently and effectively as it possibly could. Another thing feeding into it is the fact that we are not under the jurisdiction of the North American Energy Reliability Corporation, or NERC. That has some concerns as far as enforceable reliability standards. In fact, at the time of the original report in June 30 of 2015 to the legislature, there were two competing reliability standards in the rail belt. So we came up with five findings and five recommendations that are articulated in the 2015 letter, and the 2020 letter you just got about a week ago repeats what those recommendations were and what progress had been made. And I thought what I would do is just jump into the recommendations at a fairly high level and give you a summary, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. The first recommendation was we thought it was important to create an independent transmission company to transparently plan and execute major maintenance, transmission system upgrades, and projects necessary for the reliable delivery of electric power. We clearly saw that the state was not in a position to make substantial contributions to the transmission system, and it was going to have to be paid for ultimately by the ratepayers. And so over about a 4.5 year period, we received a lot of updates, various options about organizational structure. And we in fact did on February 25 of 2019, got a CPCN application from the Alaska Rail Belt Transmission LLC. That was withdrawn in the summer due to a number of circumstances. We had a lot of things transpire, including probably the largest one of the proposed acquisition of MLMP by Chugach Electric. And so that's sort of halted at that point. The second one dealt with system-wide merit order economic dispatch, and there was fairly good effort towards tight pooling between Chugach Electric and MLMP. And at the end of it, Matanuska Electric was beginning to become engaged in that. But again, that was halted about a year and 3 months ago because of, you know, focus on the acquisition. The third recommendation was perhaps I would say, colored by the experience of the commission with all of the failed efforts that had transpired before, that if the voluntary efforts do not produce results, we thought it was important to give them an opportunity to go ahead and see what they could do voluntarily. But then on March 15th, when we saw the progress is essentially stalled, issued an order seeking possible statutory changes. And we did get a lot of comments on that by early April, and I'll commend this committee that's it almost immediately, within a couple of weeks, introduced HB 151, largely based on some of the statutory language comments that we did receive. About 10 days after that, the Senate, and unfortunately last session we were getting close to the end, so there wasn't a whole lot of time for additional hearings or input, but we tried to work the best we could with the staff on the Senate side, and they crafted SB 123. And we at the commission on December 11th of 2019 voted unanimously to use 123 as the sort of the platform going forward. There continues to be, a lot of work. In fact, utilities and other impacted parties are meeting this morning just to knock off some of the rough edges and think things through about what most appropriately belongs in statutory language and what should probably be handled through some rulemaking type of process. So I'm encouraged. I think that this is something that if you would ask me about 18 months ago if we'd be this far, I probably would have been skeptical. But my sense is all of the railroad utilities, independent power producers, and some other impacted parties are moving forward in good faith and trying to get a package that can be passed this year. And ultimately, it's going to benefit the ratepayers. And I do believe with mandatory reliability standards, it's going to set the platform for perhaps moving into tight pooling or something that will move us a little closer to a security-constrained merit order dispatch, and also provide a platform for figuring out how to do necessary transmission upgrades, replacement, or even new projects as needed. So with that, I thought what I would do is just open it up, and if there are any questions the committee have, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Commissioner Pickett. Representative Fields has a question.
Thanks, Commissioner. Looking at Section 4205-294, project pre-approval, I don't see storage addressed in here, so is that...
I think that was one of the things that they're talking about now, but I think the intent is storage would be part of that past a certain scale. And again, I think that's where the various utilities and parties are trying to figure out right now where is the line, because the commission doesn't want to get down into the weeds on smaller projects that utilities just typically will do. What we're talking about are larger scale, larger dollar figures, major generation, major transmission, or a very large storage system.
Right, and that was kind of my next question is, I mean, maybe it's not even applicable for the rail belt, but the primary storage that I've seen is a flywheel with some batteries and Kodiak. And I mean, are y'all contemplating, making a utility in the rail belt go through RCA approval for that scale storage, if it was even relevant in the context of a rail belt, which I don't know.
Yeah, and part of it is separating out what is having a system-wide impact versus just the utility itself. Because the utilities have, under current statute, the authority to make the decisions, what they need to make to run our utility. Now, batteries, Golden Valley Electric at one point had the largest battery system in the world. And it's changed because a lot of utilities outside and around the world are doing things. So it is becoming more of a factor, for sure.
And if I could have a follow-up, Mr. Chairman. So thinking about complies with reliability standards, could you elaborate on what that means, and would that unwittingly ever give a commission ability to say, hey, major expansion of Fire Island Wind, for example, isn't substantially going to improve reliability within the grid, and therefore, we may not pre-approve it?
I think on the reliability standards, where the standards are at right now is just operational standards. They don't address the physical security, cybersecurity, or I think with the participation of the various IPPs and people that are into the renewable energy side of things, their concern is they want to make sure that the grid is operated on an open, transparent basis to where people know what it is they have to do. And so I don't see that the reliability standards per se would, you know, preclude that. It's going to be more of a function as to what are the needs in the system.
Okay, so the an intermittent power supply would not be seen as unreliable. That just refers to reliability of the generation.
It's going to depend on the particular supply, you know, and the size of it and where it's plugging into the grid. You know, that's all going to be very project specific.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rusher has a question now.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Chairman Pickett there, I was just wondering, after going along in the history that you just refreshed us with, and knowing where we are now, and you said that at one point, if you were to be asked if we'd be that far along 18 months ago, what changed everything? How did it all... What's the reason everybody is on board now, and is there a way to summarize that to us?
This is perhaps my own bias, I guess, but there are going to be mandatory enforceable reliability standards in the Rail Belt, period. Whether that's the commission initiating a rulemaking docket, which is not the best way to do it. We wanted a system in which the people that are actually operating the system kind of see what they need to do operationally, and then it comes up to the commission level. You don't want me going out to the power plant not trying to operate it as a regulator. These folks know how that the system works, but given the history and all the other demands that they have upon them, there still continue to be some gaps. They are working voluntarily on trying to figure out the best cybersecurity industrial control system approach. And physical security continues to be an issue.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
Any other questions from any members of the committee? It doesn't look like there are any now. Commissioner Pickett, have you seen or been concerned in the past that there could be discrimination against any type of power produced along the rail belt? Would that need to be like a renewable versus a non-renewable generation? Is that something that you feel could be a concern and should be addressed in the legislation, or do you feel that that is adequately covered?
I think it's adequately covered. I mean, the new generation, right now we have adequate generation in the rail belt. We essentially replaced most of the generation over about a five-year period, and that's the $1.5 billion I referred to. And with declining loads with the utilities, it's probably going to be down the road a little bit before you see substantial new generation. Now, does that mean that you're not going to see some level of renewables coming into the system? For example, Matanuska Electric has been working with a private solar farm up in Willow, and that seems to be working out well for them. And so individual utilities, I think, will have different approaches that they use. Wind will make sense in some areas to a degree.
Thank you. Commissioner Pickett, earlier you had mentioned that this is similar to structures that we see in the lower 48 and the outside. Can you touch base on how those work and how we have not had those reliability standards and interconnection transmission systems up here in Alaska?
I think it was actually the state political leadership, and I would say rightly so, from Senator Stevens through Representative Young and Senator McCaskey now, was very reluctant to have the NERC expand its jurisdiction to Alaska just because of our conditions up here. And I've spent the last 5.5 years really familiarizing myself with how ERCOT works in Texas, how the California ISO works, how the Western Interconnect works, MISO in the Midwest, and PJM in the East. And those are very large, large markets that have largely been restructured. And it would just create too much of an administrative overhead and burden for the relative handful of utilities we have up here. So we tried to craft something that made sense for Alaska. both in terms of scale and operation, but at the same time, to get the necessary reliability protections and sort of lay out the rules of the road for everybody.
Thank you. One final question, unless there's any other on the committee. Is there a reason that we have a stronger need for this reliability standard now as opposed to having had them in the past? Has the rail belt grown up? Have we seen additional generation infrastructure put on place? What is the need for it to be pressing now?
I think I've gotten into cybersecurity in a fairly intense way over the last 3.5 years, and the grid is a target. And we have a very strong military presence here, and I know that the Pentagon has had concerns about that, and the utilities have had concerns because, you know, they have not been taken down. But good example, we had the Massey Borough taken down for a period of time not that long ago, about 1.5 years ago. And for state actors, the grid is an attractive target. As far as other things, it was with the competing reliability standards that we had, the two sets, I think that was a major accomplishment for the utilities to get them merged and come to agreement on that part, just on the operational side. And physical security is a concern, not just up here, but outside too.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any additional questions from anybody on the committee? All right, it does not look like it. Well, thank you again, Commissioner Pickett. I genuinely appreciate you making time today. I know you have a very busy schedule there at the RCA. Now that we have adopted similar language, or identical language, to Senate Bill 123, which was unanimously endorsed by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, we're going to be having some joint hearings coming up this Monday. As I stated before, it is the intent of this committee to hold the bill and work with our colleagues in the other body to engage the utilities, stakeholders, ratepayers, and power producers on this legislation. To that end, we will be meeting in joint session with the Senate Special Committee on Railbelt Electrical Systems next Monday and Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. in the Senate Finance Room on the fifth floor. Before a brief overview of our meetings next week, I'd like to ask any member who wishes to submit questions, concerns, or suggestions in this legislation to go ahead and reach out to my office ahead of time to make sure that we can be fully prepared and make sure that the utilities and the commission and the other body are aware and prepared to answer those questions. On Monday of next week in Senate Finance on January 27th, we'll convene with the Senate Committee at 3:30 to hear from all of the railroad utilities in this legislation, all six of them. Then on the following Wednesday, January 29th, we will hear from stakeholders, independent power producers, and consumer advocates, many of whom will hopefully as well be on this electric reliability organization. We are working closely with Senator Coghill's office on these meetings, and we'll be happy to reroute any requests for information or clarifications to the right people and distribute any answers that we come or to questions that we come up with that after this committee back to all of the members. Are there any comments or questions before the committee adjourns? No, it doesn't look like it. If there's no further business today to come before the committee, this meeting will go ahead and adjourn at 10:46 p.m.